Yep, I've got one more week to go here in the cave in St. Louis. Then it's back to Los Angeles for a long time. And we're going to be putting together some fascinating programs for you when I get back there as well. Also trying to get a hold of Tom Cruise, because I'd love to invite him on the show to talk about some of the programs that he has done and some of his views on life as well. We'll be back in a moment. Our special guest is Alan Watt, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Alan, let's talk a little bit about these chemtrails and what you were saying earlier, that Prozac and other drugs might be sprayed on us. One, there's no question something's going on with chemtrails. I have not heard specifically of the drugs. I've heard a lot about weather manipulation. So tell me a little bit about this in some of the evidence that backs this up.
Well, we find the father of the H-bomb was the first man to come forward with the idea of heavily spraying the atmosphere with barium, titanium, and aluminum oxide to make it more conductive to electromagnetic pulse, which they could use from, which we now know is called HARP facilities, which, and there's over 56 of them worldwide. Through this, they knew they could control the emotions of people. It's the most easiest thing to manipulate, in fact, or is the emotion. There was a test done by the U.S. government on Maine, a covert test for over a period of years, and they studied all the reports coming in of domestic quarrels, domestic animals which became aggressive, suicides, etc., which went sky high at one point. And so they've tested this stuff over different areas over the many years. However, in the first reports from, I think it was Hellier, of the H-bomb, he said it could also be coupled with polymers. Polymers are agents which, these are the agents which create the rainbow effects in the sky when they're spraying heavily. And the polymers were designed to carry bacterium or viruses down to the ground. For warfare purposes. Well, we are seeing the polymer being used, and if you look at the heavy spraying on a sunny day, the sky ends up being very mushy, and the blue tends to be a type of blue you'd see through a thin polythene sheet, and that's the polymers you're seeing. When the snow is going, and I've photographed it up here, as well as taking samples and having them analyzed, you'll find that after 4 or 5 months of snow, when you get down to the last 4 inches, you see this cotton candy type material, and that's the polymer in a frozen form. It's about 3 or 4 inches thick when the snow first leaves, and then when the sun hits it, it breaks down into powder and stays on the ground for quite a while. So this stuff is being used, and I haven't had the ability to test for bacterium or viruses, but I have had it tested for the metals, and sure enough, it came up high with aluminum oxide and copper, titanium, and a few other trace metals.
Are they trying to dumb us down, Alan, control us? What do they want to do with us?
It's control. There's no doubt it's control. I have no doubt, too. I know that aluminum oxide, that's what you find in the brains of people with Alzheimer's. And that came out in a British medical study first in 1973. So they've always known that aluminum oxide is very good if you want to have people lose their memory. And, of course, coupled with the pulsations of HARP, which can be picked up on the shortwave radio, they've been going strong for the last 4 years now, nonstop, on certain frequencies. They can actually affect the moods of people. They claim they can also send over a secondary impulse, which will ride the back of the first. And if they want to, they could actually put thoughts in a person's head.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that this entire package is aimed at getting all of us. Who concocted all this?
the scientists, again, we can go back to H.G. Wells, who was a frontman for the British government. He belonged to the Secret Service. He was a propagandist for World War One.
Old H.G. Wells was?
Oh, yes. Yep. And he was one of the founders of the Fabian Society. The Fabian Society pretended they were a left-wing organization. But in fact, if you read the writings of a co-founder, Bertrand Russell, Lord Bertrand Russell, in the book by Ronald Clark, Russell tells you that the Webbs, Sidney and Beatrice Webb, who were the main people behind the Fabian Society, wanted a world system or government run by a super elite of technocrats, and that the public would have no say whatsoever in the way their lives would be run. So H.G. Wells was a big player. He himself was given predictive programming. This was the idea from Tavistock Institute in London, which still runs the world today with mind control. They gave him certain stories to write to incorporate certain elements or that they wanted to get through to people's heads. And he simply wrote the stories around those things. And that's why he could write about the police of the air in Shape of Things to Come that would gas the people below and force them to submit to world government. And this Third World War was to begin in Basra, where the Third World War had actually begun. Now, Basra is in Iraq.
Yes.
And that's where the British troops went, and they still man it yet. So this is predictive programming par excellence. And he knew the agenda prior to World War II.
Alan, what do you think the agenda is with this avian flu scare, which I do not believe will be a pandemic unless somehow man screws it up and it gets out into the system? And already the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has announced that it's going to test the possibility of mutations and even create them. Mm-hmm. To me, that's pretty darn dangerous.
Yeah, well, again, the H.G. Wells, Lord Bertrand Russell, Aldous Huxley, and all these predictive programmers that were given their agendas have all stated the same thing, that the biggest problem the elite faced, and this put more succinctly in the writings of Charles Galton Darwin, the physicist and grandson of Charles Darwin, in his book, The Next Million Years. He said that we are attempting misguidedly to help the people maintain their health, and it's increasing the population. So we will have to bring out specific diseases to help cull them off eventually in a way which the public would never suspect. In other words, it would be done through laboratories, and we are living in an age where there are tremendous, tremendous laboratories dedicated to creating killer diseases. Henry Kissinger put the bill in the 70s, where he stated that the greatest threat to the nation was overpopulation, and a vast sum of money was put forward to find something which would destroy the immune system, and a few years later, out comes AIDS. So they write about it, they do it, we see it manifesting, but because we're nice people and we wouldn't do that, we see, well, they couldn't really have meant it, even though the evidence is there that they did.
Somebody sent me an instant message, Alan, and simply said, what's wrong with population control if it'll make the planet better? How do you argue with that?
Well, here's the key to it. Thomas Malthus, in the 1700s, was an economist for the British East India Company. And he started the ball rolling with the scientifically controlled society and population control. And he actually advocated methods of bringing the population down by putting housing schemes in streets for the poor over swamps, etc., where they would sicken and die.
Mosquitoes would get him, and malaria and everything
else. All of that kind of stuff. A poor diet, he advocated him giving a poor diet. However, he gave out false statistics even then on the population of Britain, because the first census wasn't taken till the year after his book came out. So he fudged the statistics to suit his theory. And they've done the same thing ever since. Now, in Britain, from the First World War onwards, there was a hue and cry from the elite about bringing the population down further. H.G. Wells said in his own book, he said, the first war hasn't killed enough of them. The great H.G. Wells.
God.
And so they had a big movement to convince the public there were too many. And they said they wanted an ideal family of two parents and 1.2 child per family. Now, the British complied with that. And Margaret Thatcher, when she was in power in the 1980s, opened the door to India. And she said, the reason I have to bring them all in from India is that there's not enough people having offspring in Britain to pay off the national debt. So what I'm saying is, when you follow their instructions, you won't win anyway.
No, not at all.
You see, so this is a con game. They want a world, a post-industrial, post-technological world of pristine beauty for themselves and the elite to roam around in. They don't need all the workers anymore, and they're hyping up this overpopulation thing way out of proportion. The only reason that North America seems to be getting trouble is because all immigrants go to the major cities, and the doors have been open for years, actually, from many countries, including ones from China, and they're flooding into the major city centers, giving the appearance of overpopulation.
Would you look 10 years into your crystal ball and tell us around the year 2015, 2016, mm-hmm. what this planet will look like?
Well, I know what they want it to look like. The Rhodes Foundation has put out books on this. That was the foundation set up by Cecil Rhodes for world government based on the British system of democracy, but really to be run by the super elite. And he already said the same thing: three trading blocks with provincial governments subservient to a super government of the world, and a vastly reduced population. They want community living areas for the public. They're calling them habitat areas at the United Nations, and the populations must be kept within strictly controlled limits within those habitat areas. China has been called the model state for the world because they already implement that system. And they mandatorily have abortions for any woman that has a second child. And that's the model state for the world by our wonderful United Nations.
Remember the movie Soylent Green?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where they euthanized people when they got to a certain point?
Yeah.
Well, they made them die peacefully. Mm-hmm. But they needed them for food.
Yeah.
Do you see the day where they will just basically euthanize people based on age? They'll say, when you become 60, mm-hmm. you're going to have to go. That's the law, and they come get you, I guess.
That's the first step towards it. That's why they bring out every so often some poor soul who's dying who advocates the government should give him a doctor to kill him. And that power must never be given to government, never, because they want it. They want that power, and they will abuse it. The United Nations has defined a good citizen of the world as someone who is a good consumer-producer. When you retire, you're consuming, you're not producing. And so you become a useless eater.
Will this happen?
Russell called them.
Will it happen like that movie? And well, I'm not so sure about the eating of human wafers, but mm-hmm. what will happen?
I think that they're on the way to programming us to die at a certain age already with inoculations. I have no doubt on that at all. We know that I have it on tape, too, a videotape of Dr. Salk, who is the great hero with polio vaccine.
Sure.
And on the tape, he said, yes, we and the team knew, he said, that we had over 100 live monkey or simian viruses in every shot of polio. He said, we knew that the simian 40 virus would cause cancers and early deaths. But then he rationalized it by saying we thought the risk was worth it. So these guys have been setting us up for a much earlier fall under the guise of helping us. And we should remember that the United Nations has a department, the World Health Organization, Doctor Who, I call it. And next door to it, in the same building, they have the Department of Population Control. And when the wolf is there with a syringe to help you, I think we better be on our guard.
How many people do you think are in these groups?
There are a few hundred top groups that work on all of this in specialized areas. We know that, for instance, the Bilderbergers, what they deal with primarily is the trilateral world, the three-block world. That's their main function. The Club of Rome was set up primarily to do with the population reduction by all means possible, as Kissinger said himself, by all means possible. Other ones are dealing with the futurist think tanks. They have a few hundred futurist think tanks who come up with predictive programming, which they then give to certain authors. They've done this since the 1800s. The authors write the books. It puts the idea in our heads that, well, I guess this is inevitable. And when the real thing happens, we just go along with it because it's been programmed into us primarily through fiction. Fiction has been the main way of creating predictive programming. And they familiarize you with an idea. The sensor part of your brain is down. And in a story with an emotional tack to it, you're actually programmed for something to come, which you then think is inevitable when it actually happens.
Well, that's a good point, because I do think it is inevitable. When we come back after the break, Alan, in a few minutes, I want to talk with you about some specifics of what they're doing now. And what can we do to fight it, to combat it? Because so many people say, okay, we believe this is all happening. What can we do? And I'll tell you what else we'll do. We'll open up Fast Blasts, and we'll take some Fast Blast questions. In the next hour, we'll take phone calls as well. Tell me about the three books you've got out there.
The three books are to do with the ancient societies, the mystic societies that have been behind a lot of this for the last few thousands of years, never altering their agenda. It's not far-fetched at all, their agenda, and to their final completion as to where they want to go with humanity. I also go through the money system from ancient times to the present, and how the ancient moneylenders came from country to country, set up the system of debt, forced the countries to hire standing armies, which then used to conquer the next country, and go on from there. And how, so this whole thing of civilization is money coupled with commerce and priesthoods from the very beginning. And it's a science in itself with a definite agenda towards a common goal.
Does it bother you? Are you afraid of anything?
No, not at all, because I've realized this pretty well all of my life. I lived through the European Union. I traveled all over Europe. I was up in the music business quite high. And I kept seeing the prime minister saying in newspapers, we were over in Europe cementing ties, creating closer ties. And I thought, well, how close can we get without being united? And I was right. It was all done in covert secrecy. They set up the unification panels in secret in 1948. In 1999, they declassified that, and sure enough, in there it said that this agenda must be fulfilled and completed before the public are told the truth.
Interesting.
That's now declassified information.
All right, Alan, we'll stay with us. I tell you what we're going to do. We'll do Fast Blasts when we come back. We'll open up that. And if you have any questions for Alan Watt, I'll take them that way. At the top of the hour, we'll take phone calls. And coming up is a quick update from Richard C. Hoagland on how this Venus probe's burn around that planet has happened. And we'll check in with Richard in just a second. And let's check in with our science advisor, head of the enterprisemission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, to see how this Venus probe and its burn is about ready to do. It's supposed to have happened, right, Richard?
It's supposed to have happened about 20 minutes ago. The problem is that ESA is not giving us any information. They have a webcam shot of their control room, but it's so small you can't see any of the numbers on the screens. There's no live feed like NASA does when it has key mission activities.
ESA being the European Space Agency.
ESA, the European Space Agency. NASA is running an old historical movie on the launch of the first Columbia shuttle mission back in, you know, 81, and nobody's talking. So I'm kind of trying to read the body language of the controllers, and they all look very relaxed, so I presume the burn started, and we're about halfway through, and it will end just after the top of the hour, and we should be in orbit around Venus, and I guess I'll just have to keep looking and talk to you later.
Only you would read the body language of technicians to determine if the burn occurred, because they're not giving information.
Well, you got to do whatever you do, right?
Only, you know what? The frightening part is you're probably more accurate than they are.
They look pretty relaxed, so the burn must be good. See, what they're doing is they're monitoring what's called the Doppler, which is the radio frequency changes on the Omni antennas because they don't have a high-gain link.
Right.
So they are basically looking at a plot of the decelerating velocity, and if that was not changing, that means the rocket hadn't switched on and they'd sail past Venus, and of course the mission would be lost. So since they're so relaxed, I have to presume that the plots that I can't read are telling them that everything's okay.
I love it. We may check back with you, Richard. You're going to be up there? Awake?
I sure will.
Okay, my friend. That's Richard C. Hoagland doing his thing, and only Richard would monitor technicians to see how relaxed they are to determine whether the burn was successful or not. But you know what? That's pretty intelligent to be able just to look at that kind of body language. Back in a moment with Alan Watt on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Alan Watt, our guest. Alan, I get a fast blast in from Ron of Oklahoma, wants to know more about Skull and Bones. If you believe that organization is also part of the Illuminati, this group.
Yeah, the Skull and Bones is. Long before Weishaupt was heard of, the pirate flag of Britain was the Skull and Bones. It's the symbol of Freemasonry. And if you watch the opera Gilbert and Sullivan, The Pirates of Penzance, you'll see the raising of a mason in the first scene, where they have the apprentice with his pant leg rolled up, his breast exposed, etc., being put laid on the pirate flag, meaning symbolizing death, and then being raised up by the captain. So they go through it even on a stage play. It's definitely part of the same Illuminati program. Skull is if you speak it, is seek you all and be one.
You know, Alan, as you look at all of this, and you know, you have an opportunity to see the puzzle before even all the pieces are put in place. At what point in your life did you see this? Or what changed your life? Because a lot of us go into this and our eyes really open up wide later on. What happened with you?
I was sort of born this way. I grew up wondering why Britain was such a mess as the supposed inheritor of this British Empire and supposedly winning World War II along with his allies. And yet, growing up in that period, I didn't see anyone with any money except that those in some families in London, you know, the rich families. And that's who had inherited the wealth of the British Empire for centuries. I realized there was something much more behind all of this. And of course, once I delved into the inner religions of some of the higher elite, which I met some of them in the music industry, I realized they had a completely different religion than the masses, and they fervently believed in it. They truly believed they're descended from a different lineage, that their spirit is different from those around them. And this goes back to the writings of Plato, even, who discussed the reincarnation of the same elite spirits down through the ages, beginning with a start on Earth where the fallen angels, or caste angels as they called them, the rebels, their ancestors were cast, and they created the first physical bodies for themselves by purely willing them into existence. And the first generations retained special supernatural powers, they claimed. But they began to lose them with interbreeding with the people who were already here. And hence the need to go back to the intense interbreeding to try and retain these powers or get back these powers. And that is that was always the ancient religion of the elite in the Pharaonic times and Plato's day. And it is up until the present.
Do you think people are starting to wake up now, Alan, that they're beginning to see things that they never saw before?
They are, mainly, though, because they're afraid. And the fear alone is motivating them to ask questions. But because of their incredible conditioning in society and all the misinformation out there and the fantasy that we live in. I mean, people in the West have been conditioned to watch television so much that fantasy is completely interwoven with reality, and they have a hard time distinguishing the two. And they're also desensitized to the killing that the West has done and is still doing in the Middle East, beginning with the Vietnam era, where people were eating their dinner, watching the people in Vietnam being blown up, you know. That's desensitization. It's too unreal to us. We hardly tell the difference now between a movie and reality. And we're desensitized so much that when it happens here, and it will happen here when the time is right, we're watching the buildup of a massive internal army, the multi-jurisdictional task force. That's all the boys in uniform being set up to take care of some kind of chaos back home. And one day we will see it happen. And out of the chaos, because that's their Ordo ab Chao of the High Rites of Masonry, the Order of Perfection, the Scottish Rite, they create the chaos, then they bring their new order out from it. And the people, they hope, will be so on their knees with terror and fear that this new system that will be introduced, they'll take it up gladly, anything to stop it.
People will beg. They will beg for peace and chaos to go away.
At any cost.
Do anything you can to stop it.
Yeah.
We'll give up all our rights. Just save us.
Yeah.
And you know what, Alan? You may be right. You may be right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned earlier that science and this new world order seem to be woven together. What do you mean by that?
From the most ancient times, we find this, that the mysteries that many of the Egyptians had control over, the priesthoods, were very high understandings of what they called nature or science, the workings of nature. And they could use these sciences to control the people even in ancient times. There's no doubt about it. There's highly technological societies before this one. Much of it is supposedly being rediscovered. That's why we have research, you know. It's research. The searching was done before. There are three levels of reality. The one that Joe Blow lives in, that watches the 6 o'clock news and reads the magazines in the stores, that's the bottom level of the matrix. If you get up into a higher level, into CIA, above professorship level, you're into a new realm of science. It's much more advanced. Nick Begich showed us a technology used in the 1950s by the CIA. He demonstrated on the television on the Wendy Mesler Show, CBC. And these little handheld remote devices could put thoughts into your head, into the middle of your head, from any distance line of sight. And this was all antique technology, which the CIA possessed in the 1950s.
Oh, yeah, and it's even better now.
That's right, yeah. So that's the middle level, and above that, the controllers themselves have the ultimate weaponry, and they don't even give that to their helpers, the CIA.
Conrad from Toronto wants to know why Lord Rothschild of Britain is never on the Forbes richest list, yet his family is worth billions.
When they took over the Bank of England, they had it written into the charter with the royalty that they would never have to disclose their profits. And so they're not audited at all.
So, but you do believe that they may be the richest family on the planet?
They're one of 13, yeah. There are 13 major banking families which comprise the World Bank.
Ellen, it's that World Bank that I think is really out to control everything. I think that's where it all stems.
If you look at what we did in Yugoslavia, then in Iraq, Afghanistan, then Iraq, the first thing in was the World Bank, the centralized bank, then the World Bank. And then the UN moved in UNESCO to teach the children, the first generation of children. They always bypass the older people and go right for the children to bring them up in this new system. But the World Bank has been set up in each one of those conquered countries. They only have Iran and Syria to go next.
John from Boston wants to know about the chaos you foresee. What will it be?
I'm sure they'll use all of the standard, I call them the standard techniques of famine, and that will happen very easily in a plague, because they've already said on television that no food will come into the cities because there'll be no transportation allowed back and forth. So you'll have famine, plague. Earthquakes are caused, of course, by harpists, written into the United Nations Charter in the 1970s, I think 77. They said the harp technology must not be used between governments in warfare times because it can cause floods, hurricanes, and earthquakes. So earthquakes can be caused as well, and, of course, war. So we'll have all of the usual revelation stuff, because revelations is a revealing. It's not a prophecy. It's a revealing of a plan.
Chris from Denver wants to know if you're aware, and this is a true story, by the way, Alan, of scientists, primarily microbiologists, who have been dying around the planet over the last several years. I think they're up to like 80 now. Very unusual. Are you aware of that one?
Yes, and it makes sense, because scientists who are into that particular field know how their own theories of viruses simply evolving. They know that there are certain patterns and stages they must go through. So when they see something jumping a few stages and obviously heading towards man, then man himself has interfered to make it so. There's a good book put out about warfare with bacteria and viruses. It's called Deadly Allies, and it was published in Canada and written by a Toronto Star reporter. It's all declassified information from the Canadian government. And Canada led the field in viral and bacterial warfare during World War II and afterwards. And he goes into these techniques of modifying viruses. It's very easy. And in the Daily Mail in England had a two-page spread back in the early 90s of a reporter going into the Port and Downs Warfare Laboratory in Britain and having a morning breakfast with the scientists there, whose job it is to make these killer diseases. And he said they casually sat around having breakfast and talked about ethnic-specific diseases which they have, diseases which they can release in a country, and they can program the viruses to reproduce so many thousands of times and then die off. That's how well-programmed they can be.
So how do we fight back, Alan? What do we do about this?
I've been telling people to rapidly inform themselves with the ammunition, which is the data from those who are putting the books out on the agenda. And like Jacques Cousteau, who gave the interview and said that about 70% of the public would have to be killed off, these great heroes they give us. And once you have the information, then you tell all your politicians and you bombard them and say, look, we know what's coming. We know what's going on. We know what you're up to. And it's not going to happen.
Can we win this battle?
If we definitely tell them we're educated now, we know what's going on. You got to stop it, because if we don't stop it, they're going to do it. And once a plague is set upon the public, it will be chaos, panic, and people will simply do whatever they're told.
All right, let's assume the European Union does it on their own. Mm-hmm. Can we, as a United States, as a country, can we battle all that by ourselves?
I don't think so. I think they want this worldwide. They've said themselves that this particular plague, which they just know is coming, it's the first time in history that you can actually tell you it's just coming. It still has six jumps to go to get to man from animal, but they can tell it's just going to take this out of thousands of directions it could go. They just know it's coming our way. It's going to take 5 years of pandemics springing up and dying down worldwide before it will eventually die off. Well, that's 5 years of chaos, repetitive chaos. And a lot of the public will be killed off during that whole thing. We have to prevent it before it starts. And that's why we got to tell them all, hey, we know what's going on.
They want to go from 6-plus billion to 500,000 or 500
right.
million.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I guess they believe they can run the world on that amount of people.
They certainly do. They have the technology now all based in China. China was set up to do exactly what it's doing by the money and technology from the West. They didn't steal anything. They were given everything. And as I say, the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute of International Affairs wrote about setting China up to do this job back in the 1930s. That's how far ahead they plan everything.
Now, if they're going to allow for the destabilization of countries in the Middle East, with Iran and Syria being left,
mm-hmm.
why don't they just go to them and say, folks, you got to play ball with us here?
Mm-hmm. Well, they want, again, a chaos mentality to come through here. They want to bring all those countries, again, to their knees as well through the massive killing that's going on. And there is massive killing going on all the time there. And they want this to be... You see, what they said many, many years ago was, and this was written about by Albert Pike, the Pope of Freemasonry, who wrote Morals and Dogma. He belonged to the Rite of Perfection, or the Scottish Rite, which was not Scottish at all. That's another story. And he said there would be three world wars, two with Germany. And this was a letter in the British Museum that he wrote to Lord Rothschild. And he said the third one will be between Zionism and Islam, to be fought in the Middle East. And he said it will involve the whole world and cause such chaos that people will be so sick of religion at the end, they will allow an age of reason to come in where a scientific elite would run the world.
Is this also then a plot to do away with religions and beliefs?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Pike was very adamant on that they would keep playing it up as the war dragged on, that religion was behind it. And people would be so disgusted with it all that we'd put ourselves under the new high priests of science.
Yeah. The creators of these events, uh-huh. were they geniuses?
Yeah, you could say they were definitely geniuses, if you understand the term genius. A genius came from genii, and of course the elite of Greece, who all studied in Egypt, such as Pythagoras and Plato himself. It's the key to the mysteries, actually. They claimed that everyone was born with a soul, but you had to seek for your spirit to unite with your soul in the physical body. That was the Trinity. And when that happened, the genii... collected with the soul, and you were complete. You were a genius. You had knowledge beyond the norm. Yeah.
Well, stay with us. Alan Watt is our guest. We'll open up the phone lines next hour. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.